Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Ann White with Authors on the Air, and I am in the studio today with my co-host Pam Stack and our special guest, Robert Gregory Brown. I want to welcome all of you to our show and just let you know that you can always find us on facebook.com/authorsontheair. And you can go to our website where we have blogs and books and all sorts of fun. That is www.authorsontheair.com. And it seems tradition, it's Friday. Both Pam and I are in Florida and in a thunderstorm. So from the St. Petersburg thunderstorm, Pam, let me introduce you and bring you on from the Miami thunderstorm. Welcome, Sassy.
Well, thank you, Smart. Yes, you're right. Here I am on Miami Beach, 3 blocks from the ocean, and once again it's pouring rain. Calling from Casa Stamp here, but what can I tell you? It's all good. Hey, Anne, what is it we say? Who are these word warriors? And today
and we
I'm
have an
really,
interesting one today, yep.
We sure do, don't we? One of my most favorite authors of all times, and I'm really glad that he's here with us after much prodding and needling. Please welcome to our show, author, musician, and big man on campus, Robert Gregory Brown. Rob, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. A big man on campus, Bob.
Did you like that, BMOC? Well, welcome. We're so glad you're with us today. We really are.
Well,
how's the weather in California?
Here.
Thank you, Rob. How is it out in California? Are you getting drenched, or is it sunny as usual?
I wish. It's been about like in the hundreds out here for the last week or so, and it's just insane. We don't have much of an air conditioning system in our house, so I'm sitting here sweating most of the day.
Oh, that's not so good.
Yeah, you'll have to have your coffee iced.
That's right, iced coffee.
Yeah, there you go, iced coffee, yeah.
Speaking of which, you posted on your Facebook page for our listeners, that's Robert Gregory Brown on Facebook, a can of Kona coffee, and it looked like it was pre-made, and I was really surprised about that. Please tell me that's just what the grounds look like.
No, that was just that was a can from. I don't know if you guys have Trader Joe's in your area, but out here we have a place called Trader Joe's that sells all kinds of great food and beverages and stuff. And they are now selling Kona coffee, but that was a can of coffee beans.
Oh, very good. Yes, as a matter of fact, we are getting one at Trader Joe's over on the West Coast, closer to me actually. It would be on in Naples, Florida. In the meantime, let's go ahead and talk about your books. First of all, I am very excited to talk about your most recently released and very highly acclaimed novel. The first one that I understand you self-pubbed, which is Trial Junkies. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about it and where this came from?
First self-pubbed, Trial Junkies is a story I've been thinking about for years. I actually wrote, back in my screenwriting days, I wrote a partial script that was based on the idea, and the script was called Trial Junkies, and I've had that title in my head for like probably 20 or so years. I decided I wanted to self-publish a book. When it came time to do that, I wanted to do a book that nobody seemed to be interested in, but I was, because I thought I could sell it, and Trial Junkies was born, and fortunately it's doing very well, so I'm excited about that. It's basically the story of a group of old college roommates who reunite when one of them is arrested and put on trial for murder, and they're led by this washed-up actor named Hutch, who decides they need to work together to find out who the real killer is. And hopefully it's a roller coaster ride. I have to say I enjoyed writing it more than I've enjoyed writing a book in quite a while.
Really? It's interesting. And tell us
what
why.
Made you enjoy that, Rob? What was the difference in writing that versus Paradise Prophecy?
Well, when you decide you're going to self-publish, the only people that you're beholden to are your readers. You don't have to worry about whether the publisher is going to want you to write it in the first place, because you always have to pitch a book before you can write it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about pitching the book and worrying about them turning you down, saying, no, why don't you come up with something else or something like that. This is just a book that I really wanted to write. Even my agent at the time was like, I don't know, you know, that sounds kind of like a mundane story. So I, you know, to me it wasn't a mundane story, and that's why I decided I was going to self-publish it. And I just had a blast writing it.
Hey, Rob, let me ask you something. Have you ever sat in on any of these, any big trials or any trials at all, and have watched some of these trial groupies that go around from courtroom to courtroom?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact,
is that the idea?
The idea came from years ago. I used to work for the State Public Defender's Office in Honolulu. I was what they called the criminal intake clerk, which meant I was the guy who processed all the defendants who were charged with crimes and got them hooked up with various lawyers in the office. And part of my job was to go down every Monday and handle arraignment. And I'd walk into the courthouse, into the hall where the arraignment was taking place, where the courtroom was, and there would be people sitting along the benches, and I'd have to approach them and say, are you here for arraignment? Are you here for arraignment? And then I'd get their whole story and give them my card and tell them they'll have a lawyer for them, blah, blah, blah. And I would have a lot of downtime on those Mondays, so I would go and sit in on other trials and watch them, and was pretty much fascinated with the process. And I would see a lot of those trial junkies, retirees and people like that, who haunted the courtrooms. And the story basically grew out of that.
Interesting. Now, this is before you were a novelist and a screenwriter?
This is long before I was, both. I mean, I was writing at the time. I was trying to write, at that time I was trying to write television shows, of all things, and I couldn't ever get anybody to pay attention to my writing. Getting an agent was impossible. And I always had the dream of writing a novel, but I didn't think I was capable of it at the time.
Wow. That's terrific. And how long were you there?
I lived in Hawaii. I'm trying to think. I was in Hawaii for a long time. I lived there since I was 11 years old. So it's pretty much my hometown.
And then what brought you back to California?
When I sold a screenplay to Showtime, my agent said, we need you to be out here. It was a different time back then. We didn't have the internet, and email and easy communication other than telephone. So she said, we need you out here so everybody can see you face to face. And, you know, there were a lot of meetings and those kinds of things. And I started flying out probably 2, 3, 4 times a month for several months. And I got so burned out, I just said to my wife, we're going to have to do what my agent said and move. So we moved to California.
And you know, when I was looking at your website, Rob, when I was looking at your website, you said you fled that industry. Was it a relief to get to be full-time writing? Or did you enjoy the screen industry?
Well, I enjoyed the process of writing screenplays. I love movies. I often say I don't know which I love more, movies or books. Sometimes it's probably movies, sometimes it's probably books, just depending on my mood. But you know, I love writing screenplays. I didn't like the process of going in. You have to go in and sit down in front of a bunch of people and pitch your story and hope that they'll like it enough to say, here's the money, now go write it. And it was a very difficult process for me because I'm basically a shy guy. So it was kind of a relief to not have to deal with that kind of a thing and to just sit down and write the book that I wanted to write, which was my first book, Kiss Her Goodbye.
Now, that book got a lot of high praise. How did that come about? When did you finally decide to sit down and write that?
I was convinced by a friend of mine named Kathy Mackle, who is a screenwriter and a novelist, and I pitched the story to her once by email, and she came back and said, this sounds like it would make a really great novel. Why don't you write it as a novel? And I said, oh, I don't, you know, I would love to, but I don't, I'm not sure that I'd be able to sustain, you know, like 400 pages of prose. Because at the time I was writing screenplays that have a lot of white space, and a lot of dialogue and very minimal narrative. And she said, well, just write, you know, 4 or 5 chapters, give it a try, send them to me, and I'll tell you whether or not, you know, you've got something. So I did that. I sent the chapters to her. And she wrote me back, and all she said in the email was, finish this book. So that,
wow.
Yeah, that gave me enough kind of a kick in the butt to actually sit down and write those 400 pages. And I had a ball doing it. I felt free. It was wonderful. And
you wouldn't put yourself out in front of anyone, though. You were getting to say what you wanted to say and say it all the way through the end.
Absolutely. And nobody else interfering with the story or anything, which is great. And once it was finished, I gave it to my former screen agents and asked her if she had any friends in New York, any agent friends in New York that could take a look at it. She loved the book and recommended it to Trident Media Group, which is a big agency in New York, my former agency. And they loved it, and within a couple of months, the book was sold to St. Martin's. So it was kind of a whirlwind experience.
It really was. Is it true that most novelists, especially, you know, their first time there, they do not have that kind of a whirlwind romance, so to speak?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of my writer friends get a little angry when I tell that story because they had to go through several books and try, you know, email or letter after letter to get agents to pay any attention to them. It is a very, very difficult process, or at least it used to be. And, you know, am I allowed to swear on this thing? I did.
Sure, say whatever you want. We're on Blog Talk Radio.
I did as William Goldman said, I jumped past all the shit. So I was very... I was very fortunate.
That's amazing. It is amazing to see, because you just made a comment now. You said, you know, it's a very, very hard thing, at least it used to be. But it seems to me now it is more difficult to be published by, to first of all, get a book recognized by a publishing house, but never mind to have them sign a contract with any new authors. Do they actually still do that? And it must be on a lot limited basis than it was when you first got started, Rob.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more limited. I think it is much tougher to get a book with a traditional publishing house, especially since they're looking for books that they hope will be blockbusters. There's a very very kind of a blockbuster mentality going on in the big publishing houses right now, very much like Hollywood.
I see that.
Yeah, that's kind of how the Paradise Prophecy came about, because Penguin was looking for a big blockbuster, and the editor there, Ben Sevier, had been my editor on Kiss Her Goodbye, and had subsequently left and gone to Dutton. And he called me up and said, hey, we want to do this big blockbuster story about angels and demons and, you know, a spy trying to stop them and that kind of a thing. And would you be interested in writing it? And I was kind of trying to get out of the supernatural realm for my book. The book previous to that, Down Among the Dead Men, it has some occult things going on it, but there's no real supernatural in it. So I was kind of trying to get out of the realm, so I was a little bit reluctant, but then, you know, we negotiated a great deal, so that made a big difference.
Right.
And the Paradise Prophecy was born.
Now, did you write Paradise Prophecy before that other guy wrote his big book?
The other guy
had the same last name. He just spells it differently. You know,
Dan?
Guy. Dan, yeah.
Mr. Dan Brown?
Yes. Because didn't that turn out to be the big angels and demons book?
I don't think his books have any supernatural in them at all, as far as I know. His books center around a guy who's like a, what do they call him? I can't think of it.
The Freemason guy?
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah,
and yeah, he looks at symbols and can tell you, you know,
right,
historically.
Right. Right.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Dutton was thinking about the Da Vinci Code when they came to me, you know, with this
really?
With this this story, you know. So, you know, I always write the book that I want to write. I read the Da Vinci Code about 5 or 6 years ago, and kind of forgot about it. So.
Yeah. But your book is up to be. Your book has been optioned. Paradise Prophecy has been optioned, and they are looking at what either a television series or movie of the week, or maybe even to the big screen. Correct.
That's right. It's the producers that are attached are a production company called Temple Hill, and they are the folks that brought you Twilight and all the sequels. So they're pretty big. So hopefully they'll be able to get something going. You never know in Hollywood. That's the problem. It's like Kiss for Goodbye was optioned and became a television pilot, and they did a beautiful job of producing this pilot. I mean, they were faithful to the book, and it was just gorgeously produced, beautifully acted, wonderfully directed, and now nobody will see it because CBS decided not to go forward with the TV show. So,
what are the chances of them ever doing pulling it up again, though? I mean, I know you wrote it a couple years ago, but once it's done, it's done?
Pretty much zero, yes. It's pretty bad at this point. All the actors have gone on to new jobs. The director has gone on to new series, and the producers have, they're doing Justified and a couple other shows now. So,
no slouch group, that's for sure.
No. They were a great group, and they do very, very good work. But I mean, this is what Hollywood is. There's a lot of, you know, you can always get very close, and then it falls apart at the last minute. And the Paradise Prophecy at this point is kind of in its infancy as far as making it to the screen goes. There's a lot of hoops that have to be jumped through before it ever makes it. And I was told recently that it's still very much alive as a project. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
When you were writing the Paradise Prophecy, it's a complicated with a lot of the twists and turns. And I was looking at your writing style on your website, and you said sometimes you plot it all out, and then sometimes you start and let the characters lead you. When you were writing that book, what was your method for it? Because you do have a lot of twists and plot turns.
Well, I actually got started writing the book, they wanted a specific outline, and I gave them a 200-page outline. The reason they wanted that is because they wanted to start shopping it to Hollywood as quickly as possible. And in that outline, I spelled out a very specific story with a very specific beats, but once I wrote the book, following that outline, I was completely unhappy with it. So I talked to my editor about it, and I went back and rewrote the entire second half, and I did that completely without an outline.
Just let the characters take you, huh?
Yeah, because it just turned out to be, once I owned the book and owned those characters, it became a much better book. I was, like I said, I was completely unhappy with the first draft, which doesn't usually happen to me. Usually I'm more of a first draft kind of guy. But this one was pretty complicated.
Yeah.
I think I read someplace about you that you said, you know, you want to be grabbed not only by the first page or the first paragraph, but by the first sentence, and that you endeavor to do that. That's how you'll make your own book selection, and you want your readers to be grabbed in the first sentence. And then in another part of an interview, you said also that you don't know what's going to happen in the book. So for you to lay out a storyboard is really unnecessary and unwarranted because you really don't know what's happening. Are those two quotes or anecdotes about you so? Is that truly how you feel now when you start writing?
Well, things have changed a little for me since then. That is generally how I like to write a book. That's how I prefer to write a book. But then there's this little there's this little thing that intrudes called deadlines. And when you have a deadline, depending on that deadline, sometimes you have to be able to write very fast. And I also write under a pen name. And the books that I write under the pen name are short suspense thrillers that have to be written very quickly. I sometimes write them in, you know, like 3 weeks. And for those, I have to have an outline. I have to know exactly where I'm going so I don't get slowed down by anything. I don't have the luxury of sitting back and going, okay, what's going to happen now? You know, I have to know that immediately, and so that nothing can slow me down so that I can meet that deadline. But with my Robert Gregory Brown books, generally speaking, I just come up with a premise and then start writing. And that's the way I prefer to do it.
And you let the organics of the story take you where it's going?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I have read something interesting about you as well, that you mentioned earlier that you do have a little bit of a supernatural undertone to a lot of your books, paranormal, supernatural, and I like that. I mean, I'm very interested in that genre. Rob, do you believe in reincarnation?
You know, I kind of waffle about that. Sometimes I think it's probably true, and sometimes I don't. Somebody on Facebook recently said, "What is your?" They asked the question, "What is your earliest memory?" And I jokingly said, "A tunnel and a light at the end." And I thought, you know, it's interesting that supposedly when we die, that's what we see. Well, what if that tunnel is basically the birth canal, and we're getting ready to be born again? I think that would be a very interesting thing.
So whether now, have you ever had past life regression?
What's that?
Have you ever had a past life regression reading?
Yeah, when I was doing research for the book that eventually became Killer Again, and this was years ago because it was originally a movie idea, I went to a hypnotherapist who specialized in past life regression therapy, and she put me under and did the whole thing. And I found out that I was a Southern Belle during the Civil War.
And but, cute. And cute, too.
I was gorgeous. I looked just like Scarlett O'Hara.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean... It
oh,
was,
you are so going to suffer for this, Rob. Can't you hold it in?
The thing
I'm
was,
sorry.
It was, when I came out of it, when I came out of the whole thing, I realized that, you know, basically what I was doing was what I always do. I was just making stuff up, you know? It was like, I don't think I was ever really hypnotized at all, but I was just making stuff up.
Did
but
you feel hypnotized, by the way? Did you feel it? Did you feel like you were hypnotized? Serious.
No, not at all. I mean, I felt, what I felt was drowsy, but, you know, it doesn't take much to get me drowsy, you know, so I sleep there. I sleep terribly, which is why I drink a lot of coffee, is because it's the only thing that keeps me awake.
You are so funny. I want to ask you about your love of music. I have to tell our listeners and your fans that I have listened to some of your ukulele music and your guitar music. It is truly exquisite. You are a very talented man. Do you have your ukulele close to you right now?
No, unfortunately I don't. I'm sitting in a completely different room, and it would be impossible at this point in time.
So tell us about your love of stringed instruments.
I've been playing, I started on the ukulele when I was 8 years old. My uncle came to visit the family, and he brought along his ukulele, and he was playing it, and I was just like, holy crap, I want to be able to do that. So he said, hey, come here, you know, and he showed me about 3 or 4 chords, which I played terribly, and he says, you got to practice. And I was like, well, I don't have an ukulele. He says, well, you keep this one for a few months. I'll come back and get it later. And he left it with me for like 5 years. But and during that period of time, I not only learned how to play the uke, I picked up the guitar about 3 or 4 years later and learned how to play that. And I've since graduated to keyboards and I love music. It's a part of me. I wanted at one point to be, you know, like the next James Taylor or whatever. And when I realized I was too afraid to get up in front of people and play that that would probably never happen. So that's when I decided I should probably be a writer where I can hide in my room and practice my craft.
You know,
Rob, have you ever thought about
your...
being a songwriter?
Well, I've been writing songs since I was eight. I mean, the first, I think, probably not since I was eight, probably since I was about 12, because I remember the first song I remember writing was for this redhead in seventh grade that I was just madly in love with. But, of course, she never knew it. It was a love from afar kind of thing. And I wrote a song, Stephanie, you're the only girl for me. You know, and it was like just me trying to get it out, you know. And from there, I didn't stop writing. I kept writing songs for years. I still do it sometimes. I mostly write instrumental stuff now, but I've been a songwriter for years. Just kind of a frustrated musician. I look at it as a hobby more than anything else at this point. It allows me to stretch my creative muscles in a different way and get me away from writing, which sometimes can drive you mad.
You know what I was finding interesting? When you do the stringed instruments a lot, we talked to Raymond Benson, who is a concert pianist. We know Mike Farisee plays bagpipes. It's interesting that many of you use music. I wonder if there's a connection or if it's just a way to relax and, you know, but
well,
you should have a band or something.
I definitely think that music is part of my writing as well, because
really?
I look at writing as having a rhythm and a meter to it. I'll be constantly changing, reworking sentences until they flow. My whole mission, I think, as a writer, is to get readers to keep turning the pages, and part of that is to give the prose a certain flow. I mean, I write very meat and potatoes kind of prose, but I at least try to do it in a way that just keeps people to want to keep reading. It's like they're listening to a song and it's driving them forward.
Your writing has a cadence to it, a beautiful cadence.
I never thought of it
in that way.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. There's a nuance to it.
I work very hard to do that, and I do think that has a lot to do with my musical background.
Rob, do you read what you write out loud to yourself?
I read as I write. I don't go back and read it. I read as I write. I am saying it out loud as I'm writing it.
Really? If I can read a book out loud and the nuance of all the words and the timbre and the cadence of everything, if it sounds pleasing to my ear when I'm reading it, because I love to read, and this, you're talking to a woman who reads two books a day, then I'm going to continue to read that book, and that moves me forward. So I understand what you're saying. I wish that other authors understood how important the placement of words in a sentence is. It really is critical to push the story forward. I think that there are speed bumps along the way, and if you're smart enough when you're writing, you can see those. And perhaps by reading them out loud, as you were explaining, it is almost like notes on manuscript paper. I understand that, and I appreciate it. From a musician's standpoint as well, I've been playing since I was five, so I understand that. I have a question for you. You always say that you're very shy. You know, when you talked about screenwriting, you weren't really out there pushing yourself and you couldn't be that aggressive guy. And your books, you talk about it in your music. But I also read that you said in the publishing crowd you feel like a social animal. So how do we reconcile the two Robs?
You know, when you go
Were you saying that tongue-in-cheek, Rob?
No, I wasn't saying it tongue-in-cheek. I have to say that I feel very comfortable among, you know, my people, I guess you'd call them, other writers, readers, people who love books, publishers, editors, people who all speak the same basic language. I feel comfortable because we have something to talk about. I'm not great at small talk, and so I'm usually the guy in the room when there's a party going on who's, you know, talking a little bit but is generally very quiet. And I'd say even at conferences, I'm probably one of the more quiet people. But I do at least enjoy, for the most part, those situations. You do have to kind of put on a different hat, you know, when you get into a situation like that. You have to put on your public hat, and you feel like you're on a lot. And that can be very exhausting, but it's also a lot of fun.
Do you have a favorite conference you like to go to, Rob, for writers?
The very best conference I ever went to was the first Thriller Fest conference, which was in Arizona in terrible, terrible heat. Fortunately, we were inside a hotel most of the time, so air conditioning was wonderful. But the heat outside was stifling, so nobody went anywhere, and the conference was very small because it was the first year for Thriller Fest. And I met a lot of people who are still very good friends today, including Brett Battles. He and I met there. And
he's your bestie, right?
I'd say he's pretty much my best friend. And it was just a wonderful conference. I also like BoucherCon. It's a great conference, although it's the opposite in terms of the number of people. There's, you know, probably thousands there. I don't know how many people go to BoucherCon, but it's usually very crowded, and you're lucky sometimes if you see, your friends. I like those.
You were just at Romance Writers, too, weren't you?
Yeah, I went to RW. Well, I just went down there as a guest. I was just down there for a few hours to see my friend Cindy Gerard. We had dinner. The RT Book Lovers Conference, I think, is a great one too, because it's all about the reader, and I love conferences where there's a lot of readers.
Yeah, that makes it nice. You know, one of the reasons I loved Trial Junkies is in a former life I was a trial attorney, and when I read your book, you really had the characters down. I mean, these are the people that do sit in the courtroom, some of the old retired ones. So I loved how you did your characters. And so what I'm wondering, are you working on a new project now? Do you have another one going? Will it be similar to Trial Junkies? Are you going to take a different turn?
Well, Trial Junkies is actually the first in a series, so I'm supposed to be working on a sequel.
Okay.
I've been lazy. I got back from Hawaii, so I've been lazy. You know, I've been kind of laying around doing nothing, reading books and watching movies. But I'm hoping to have the second Trial Junkies written and out in time for the Christmas rush. So,
fabulous.
Wish me
luck. Now, you had a birthday while you were there, right? You had a birthday while you were in Honolulu this time?
July 8th was my birthday, so we celebrated in Hawaii.
Happy belated. Happy belated.
Thank you.
I have a couple just kind of quick questions and answers, hopefully, from you. So because we don't want to spend the whole – well, we want to spend the whole day talking to you. Whether you want to talk to us is another question. But bad reviews, what do you do?
Bad reviews?
Yeah.
I read them. I swear at the person who wrote them, and then I forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
I have to say that I do get a little annoyed by some of the one-star reviews that, not so much on my stuff, but I've seen one-star reviews on other books for other authors that say, this book costs too much, or you know, something like that. You know, it's like, well, you know, don't review the price of the book, review the book. But other than that, you know, you can't take reviews, either good or bad, too seriously, because it's basically a person's opinion, and I have different opinions, too. So, you know.
Hey, what genre would we be surprised to find out that you really enjoy?
What genres? I enjoy all genres. I've read romance novels. I love crime thrillers, mysteries. I like westerns. I like literary novels. One of my favorite authors who's no longer with us was a guy named James Kirkwood, who wrote really great, like, coming-of-age stories.
Really?
I strongly recommend James Kirkwood. Any book by him is just a great read.
Okay.
Is there an author that inspires you?
What's that?
Is there an author that inspires you?
I'm inspired a lot by the authors of the 50s and 60s, like who got their start back then, and they were writing paperback originals for like gold medal books, Fawcett Gold Medal, and guys like John D. McDonald and Donald Westlake, and there's a whole list of those guys, and I collect those books. I don't collect them so much for their value as books, but just to read, because I love those old stories.
For the enjoyment of reading it, yeah.
Yeah, and they were all about 50 or 60,000 words long. They weren't exactly long stories, but they just grip you and carry you along. And these guys were masters in the craft, and they were having to write, 4 and 5 books a year in order to survive.
Right.
Under different names, and that's kind of what I aspire to doing at some point.
Well, that's terrific.
I
like that
so
genre
crazy.
As well, so I understand that. Hey, Rob, is there too much or too little information about you right now on the web?
Too much or too little? No, I let out however much I want people to know about.
What do you think about this thing called the web and authors and... And all. I mean, you have to mingle with the crowd a little bit, right?
Well, I love it. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't be on Facebook if I didn't enjoy it. I like being on Facebook and getting out there and just not necessarily just with talking with readers, but just interacting with people. You know, being a writer is a very lonely job. You sit in a room all day long and stare at the computer. So I've always got Facebook open over there, and when I'm stuck in the middle of a book, I pop over and say something sarcastic and usually get snarky remarks back, which I enjoy.
Gee, who would that be from? I have
Let
one question
think.
And then Anne has a couple questions for you, but I have one. It's a raging question here on Authors on the Air, and Scott and Sassy have to know for their own personal reasons, but dogs or cats?
I'm a cat guy. I have a dog. but I love my cats.
How many do
you
have?
Last week.
I have two cats.
I'm sorry. Last week, Rob, your friend CJ Lyons was a guest on our show, and she is also a cat lover, so I just want you to know that's two solid wins in my column. And it's back to you, darling. Rob, I am thrilled that I got to talk to you after all of our times chatting. Please let me tell your fans and our listeners that they can reach you on Facebook at Robert Gregory Browne, B-R-O-W-N-E, and on the net at the same address, www.robertgregorybrown.com. Please go out, and if you have not read it, you gotta read Trial Junkies. It'll kind of, I kind of likened it to deep sea fishing here in Florida, something that we love to do. You know, you're just kind of waiting while the line's out there behind the big trolling boat, and all of a sudden, zip, the line pulls, and there you know you got a strike. That's how Trial Junkies hit me. When it hits, it's so fast and furious, folks, you're going to love it. And, of course, you can't go wrong with Paradise Prophecy, one of the most well-written, beautifully written books that it's been my pleasure to have read. And by the by, we cannot let it go, let you go without talking about Love is Murder, which is a compilation of short stories talking about thrillers and love. And Mr. Brown here has a very interesting story in there, so I think you'll enjoy it. Anne?
What story is that, Rob? What story do you have in Love is Murder?
It's a story called Speechless, and it's generally about a mother-daughter relationship. It's funny because it's actually my wife who kind of came up with the idea for it, and I kind of went, oh, yeah, and I could turn that into a murder mystery. So I ran with it, and I had been pleased to be asked by ITW and Sandra Brown to do a story for the book. So it was a lot of fun. I don't usually write short stories.
Oh, it sounds like it.
Yeah. It was a good one, I'll tell you.
I'll have to check it out. Rob, do you mind saying what your pen name is? You said you have a few books under a pen name?
No, my pen name is a top secret name, so
okay.
I can't.
That's okay. Then let me ask you my next question. Since I love Trial Junkies, when will you, what's the name of the one that's going to come out, the sequel? I know you said around the holidays, but what name?
It's called Negligence.
Okay.
And it will be a Trial Junkie novel.
Negligence, a Trial Junkies thriller is how you'll see it. So if you
are
searching for it and can't remember what it's called, just type in Trial Junkies on Amazon and it'll pop up.
I'm assuming it will have some of the same characters.
It will have all except for one who will be out of the picture for the length of that particular book, but may show up in future books.
Okay. All right. Well, Anne, we got a great show coming up next week. Before we say goodbye to Rob, if you will just tell us who's coming in next week. I think it's our old buddy Mike Farisee with his he's introducing his new Dev Haskell novel, Bombshell. And we have
And he's the bagpipe player, so I'm thinking we have a ukulele and a bagpipe, and we're just going to get together and have a hootenanny.
Now, what is does Brett play an instrument? By the way, do you know Rob?
I think the only instrument is flapping his jaw. That's the only one that Brett has. So.
I'm sure he'll be thrilled to hear you say that. I will send him the link. Of course, you know,
thank
Raymond
you so much
plays
for being
piano.
With
us. Thanks for being with us, Rob. You're terrific. We've really enjoyed talking to you. And come back again, won't you, when the next Trial Junkies comes out. Come back and tell us about it.
I will be happy to. I don't know how much more I could possibly say about myself, but okay.
Oh, there's much more. And we'll get into coffee tastings and Kona and all sorts of fun things. But
it's
been wonderful.
We barely touched the surface here.
That's probably true.
Rob, thanks for everything. Enjoy your California sun while we are melting in our Florida rain. And we'll see you on Facebook. Thank you.
All righty then. Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye, Rob.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so Pam, you said we do have Mike Farisee next week with Bombshell, but we have a surprise coming on a very unusual time. This Sunday at 7 o'clock, barring thunderstorms or anything else, we have a Leland Dirks, our author with Jimmy Mender and his Miracle Dog.
Miracle
will be joining us.
With his pack, which we have, he also did Angelo's Journey and Seven Dogs. Just his books are marvelous. Please go and look at authorsontheair.com and see who's coming up. We've got a lot of great people, don't we, Smart?
We do, but I wanted to say one more thing about Leland's broadcast on Sunday. He read a story from his Mostly True short stories, and both Pam and I were just the goosebumps. It was just so powerful to hear him read one of his stories. So make sure that
you were quiet, and that was amazing.
I know. There was silence for a little bit. And we have Heather Graham coming. Heather Graham is somebody that we're looking forward to. And
she's written over 100 books in a lot of different genres. She's a very fascinating and very talented woman. I am so honored that she has agreed to come and join us.
And then Keelan Patrick Burke, so a little more horror.
A little more horror, but boy, is he a hottie. I can't wait for him to get on with us.
Thank goodness it rains in Miami when we're on the air. That'll keep you cool.
There you go. Hey, thank you so much for joining us today, listeners. We're so honored that you joined us to hear Robert Gregory Brown. And come back and visit us next week, won't you? Thanks so much for everything, Ann. Have a great afternoon and a nice weekend.
And you too, and since it is the weekend, grab a good book. Maybe Trial Junkies will be the book you grab, and just curl up in a chair and enjoy the weekend. Take care. Thank you so much. This is Authors on the Air saying goodbye. Take care. Bye-bye, everybody.